This is Bob Lang, oral historian. Today is March 6, 2013. This is the third session with Emeritus Professor Edward R. Hasselkus. And the interview today will begin with a focus on the Arboretum. We are working initially from some suggestions from Susan Carpenter. So Ed, I'll turn to you with Susan's first question, which is, how is Longenecker Horticultural Gardens unique among arboreta? What are its greatest strengths?
The Longenecker Horticultural Gardens is today the premier collection of woody ornamentals in the state of Wisconsin. We have a major collection of lilacs going back to 1935 that has attracted the convention of the International Lilac Society to be hosted here twice in 1985 and again this year in 2013. We have what I consider to be the most up-to-date collection of ornamental crabapples in the world. Part of that is because of my interest in that group of plants throughout my career. The Longenecker Gardens is really unique in the upper Midwest in having emphasized the collection of cultivars of trees and shrubs. This means we are constantly trying to keep it up to date. So we have the newest and best trees, cultivars of trees and shrubs represented in the gardens. So this means that there's always something new to see for visitors. It's not a humdrum place that never changes, but there are new things on offer every year. I think the other thing is that even for people who aren't ever going to look at a label, it is a pleasing landscape experience to visit these gardens.
Ed, what does that mean exactly when you say a pleasing landscape for people to look at, even if they're not scientifically inclined to come look at the labels?
Part of it is, I think, the design of the gardens, thanks to Bill Longenecker, a fantastic setting, really. There's a main vista through the gardens and rises up at the other end to the Pinetum. So many people just come to enjoy the walk through the gardens. See the birds. Hopefully it's quiet and it's a pleasing experience for a visitor.
Ed, are you ever concerned about the number of people who come through the Arboretum? Is that at all a threat to its continued flourishing, or are you content with how it is viewed and used?
I always felt that we, with the drive through the Arboretum, we're more concerned about the people who wander off the drive with a vehicle. Probably the capacity of the parking lots, when the lilacs are in bloom, or the crabapples are in bloom, the magnolias are in bloom, that is the limiting factor. No, I don't think, other than a few weekends in during the year, no problem, really.
Mm-hmm. And you get lots of elementary and high school tours here, don't you?
I don't personally, but yes, there are. The ones I'm mainly interested in are all of the vocational programs throughout the state. Who bring the professors, bring or instructors, bring their classes here to teach them woody plants.
And is it fair to think that Professor Longenecker was the key figure to begin really developing not only the lilacs and woody plants, but the arboretum in general?
Yes, after all, he was the director of the arboretum for many, many years, several decades. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens, he's the creator of it, really, and created the master plan, which we are still abiding by today.
And did you ever talk with him about the exact nature of his interest in lilacs?
That's a good question, Bob. But in 1935, there were a number of lilac collections being created in the United States. And so, and there's a huge interest in lilacs at that time, which admittedly has waned somewhat in succeeding years. Partly, I think, that people realize lilacs are fabulous when in bloom. But as a landscape plant, what else do they offer the remaining many months of the year?
Hmm. Interesting. Well, anything else before we move on to the next one that you want to address to the greatest strengths of the Arboretum?
Well, we're talking about the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens, really. And so I think we've
covered that.
Enumerated that pretty much, yes.
The next question from Susan Carpenter is, what have been the most significant changes in Longenecker Horticultural Gardens over the years?
When I arrived in 1966, there were no deer. That is an extremely important change, which has limited our use of a lot of plants and requires the erection of a deer fence in the fall, taking it down in the spring to protect this valuable resource. In 1966, there were no restrooms. There's no place to get a drink. There wasn't a visitor center. The use of mulch and herbicides had not been the case back then. And so crews of hired students used hoes in the shrub beds. Oh. And so it was a very, very different place. The other thing I should mention is that all of the brush that was collected from pruning was put in a huge pile and burned.
Oh.
We now, of course, have a chipper and create our own mulch out of the woody prunings. Longenecker had actually begun a few plantings in the tree area and in the pinetum, but no mowing was done. And what happened was that a fire somehow got started and raged through the whole area.
Oh.
And destroyed everything that had been planted up to that time.
When was that?
I can't say the exact year, but it was, I would say, about 1962 or three, maybe. Hmm. And because those areas had not been mown, buckthorns, honeysuckles, sumacs sprung up all over, and it was a pretty sad-looking place. I well remember in 1966 when I took over, Grant Cottom said to me, "Ed, get busy." And so he was concerned that the area was being neglected and that it was time that we got on top of it. I also remember when I took over in 1966, the crabapple collection had been neglected a lot and desperately was in need of pruning. Another very important difference back then, no volunteers. Hadn't been thought of yet. Another, I don't think one would ever see a woman out here working.
Women used the arboretum and the
as a visitor. Yes,
but
it was a man's world, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I have seen an enormous number of changes.
Indeed, you have.
And when I took over, there's a very haphazard labeling system. Plants had not been accessioned. So when I came, we started an accession system. Every plant then got a unique number. And I backed up and assigned accession numbers to all of the plants that had been previously planted.
And your efforts to codify and organize the Longenecker Gardens had the support of Professor Longenecker, would you say?
Oh, definitely. And so, certainly Grant Cottom, who was chair of the Arboretum Committee. Mm-hmm. I guess I should back up, and I don't know whether I've said this, but I had Grant Cottom as a professor in plant ecology. I had courses from Jerry Gerloff in the botany department and from John Thompson in the botany department. Both John Thompson and Jerry Gerloff served on my PhD committee. And these are three people that I served on the Arboretum Committee for probably 21 years. So I had the support of these people who I knew well, mm-hmm. in addition to Bill Longenecker, of course.
And Longenecker was happy with your selection as curator.
He was the one who asked me to do it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we can assume that was he was happy with that.
Yes. Yes. So I guess I could go on and on enumerating changes, but I remember my requesting that we get a chipper and that we get a flail mower to do a proper job of mowing.
And what is that?
A flail mower is a mower that doesn't cut fine turf. It cuts turf, let's say, at about 4 inches.
Oh, I see.
And is large, so it's very efficient, covers a lot of territory. And in those days, all we needed to do is ask a chancellor for that money.
That's right, and sure, you explained that earlier.
Yes, yes. So that was part of, and then providing, producing wood chips, mm-hmm. which we used as mulch.
Ed, how much, can you give me a percentage of your time that you spent as curator? Was it half of your time, a quarter of your time?
No, probably about 20%, I would guess. Basically what I did, I devoted every Friday afternoon to the Arboretum, to the Longenecker Gardens. And that's when I hired students up until the time I retired. That tradition continued with working with volunteers on Friday afternoons, which goes on at the present.
Ed, were you instrumental in bringing volunteers in here?
Probably not initially, because I had used students until I retired in 1994. And so really my volunteer involvement started then up to the present. And by then there was a well-established volunteer program here in the Arboretum.
And did you have good relations with the various Madison garden committees, women's garden committees. Did you get to know them and work with them in supporting the Arboretum?
Well, I previously enumerated the fact that Madison's West Side Garden Club, starting in 1942, with Bill Longenecker's encouragement, I'm sure, supported the development of the ornamental crabapple collection. They have supported the Longenecker Gardens every year since then. And so one of the things they've done is that they have we've designated a memorial crab apple to each of their departed members. It turns out I knew most of them. And just last evening at a function, I met a daughter of one of the departed West Side Garden Club women. And she had no idea her mother had a memorial tree out here in the Longenecker Gardens.
And is it labeled as such?
Yes, yes. So I offered to take her to see it next spring. She's going to call me.
That's really a wonderful tradition.
Well, we have a program of memorial or tribute trees. And while it's a nuisance for those of us dealing with it and mapping and keeping track, I feel it's very important for the public to have a personal touch, personal involvement with the Longenecker Gardens.
And from a professional perspective, I would think that that's a reasonable development that could lead to financial support from some of those families for the gardens.
Well, that's right. And in fact, the initial support is $1,000 right now to have a tree designated as a tribute or memorial tree.
Oh, I see.
We also have these beautiful new benches that cost a donor $10,000. And so basically, the half of the $10,000 goes into the Longenecker Endowment, the other to support the bench and its upkeep.
Another carpenter question here is surprises. What has surprised you most during your tenure as curator?
I think the thing that touched me the most and surprised me the most was the endowment. And I think we haven't said a lot about that yet.
No.
In 1998, I had been retired 4 years, and I got to thinking, what's going to happen to the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens after I'm gone? So my wife Betty and I established a Longenecker Horticultural Gardens endowment. It remained the best kept secret in the world. My volunteers knew about it and supported it, but it wasn't until much more recent, let's say the last 10 years, even the last 5 years, that the Arboretum got serious about it. And so
raising
endowment funds. So the UW Foundation rolled into action, really, and made it a priority. And originally, it was simply the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens Endowment. We decided at one point that no curator, no gardens, really. And so the focus shifted to the Ed Hasselkus Longenecker Gardens Endowment Fund.
Okay. And oh, so the fund carries your name.
Yes, okay. It does now. And the emphasis was on supporting a curator. And the foundation figured it would take $1.2 million to do that. And so this past summer, we reached our goal of $1.2 million and had a celebration corresponding with my 80th birthday last July. And part of the contributions to the endowment were from the Friends of the Arboretum. They pledged, as I remember, it was $150,000 to the endowment. And part of the agreement was that it would support the construction of a new elegant entrance feature to the Longenecker Gardens, which I was worried about wasn't going to make it in time for the dedication last July, but it did, and it is gorgeous. Now, back when I came, there were no signs anywhere. People just got out of their car and started doing things. I finally, at some point along the line, got a nice wooden sign that said Longenecker Gardens. That's all there was. Now this new feature, people get out of their car, they see this, which from the parking lot, it's fairly obvious. And it is the entrance then to the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens. Now back to the endowment. My biggest surprise and delight has been the generosity of my friends and my family and people who love the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens.
That's wonderful.
Now, while we have raised the $1.2 million fund, a substantial amount of it is in bequests.
So you don't have it yet.
That obviously won't be received and earning money until that person dies. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping that by the end of this year, 2013, there will be sufficient earnings to hire person, whether that person will be called a horticulturist or a curator, or that remains to be seen.
So there's not been any curatorial staff, so to speak, except for Professor Longenecker and then Professor Hasselke.
Yes, just the two of us. That's right. And so hopefully.
That's amazing.
Soon, yes. Well, it's been 46 years now. For me, mm-hmm. And Bill Longenecker not as long because he didn't live long enough. So we hope by the end of this year there will be a new face here.
And that pleases you.
Very much.
Will there be another you from the Department of Horticulture?
No, this will be unrelated to the Department of Horticulture.
And will this person be a scholar like you? Will it be a PhD?
No, it will. I visualize this person being having a master's degree, hopefully a love of woody plants and a knowledge of them, and skills that I lack in technology. And hopefully being loved by the volunteers as I have been.
Yeah, social skills will be critical.
I think very important. And my volunteers are very worried that I'm going to disappear. Well, I think I'll become a fellow volunteer with them under the direction of somebody else.
So like one of those tomes about World War II, you will become one of the wise men.
Well,
in a way, I'm not making a joke here, not that you will be meddling, but you are a resource.
Yes, yes. So I'm I can't wait to turn over the reins to this wonderful new person.
And there will, I assume, be an adequate supply of applicants.
I would hope so. I see no reason why not. I haven't selected anybody, by the way.
I didn't think you
not like Bill Longenecker, just to ask somebody, but no.
Will this position have any sort of honorary tie or position in horticulture?
I don't foresee it. I think this is this person is going to be a definite member of the Arboretum team.
That'll be a change, won't it?
It will, yes. Yes. And I hope it works out.
Ed, I'm curious, you made a reference to your great pleasure about how your friends supported and colleagues supported the endowment fund. Was there another population that the foundation pursued, sort of like, you know, whenever the library tried to raise money, you could say, well, everybody benefited from the library, and so how do you know who to go to? Same thing, I would think, for the Arboretum. You just don't know who strolled through here and wanted to support it. Was there an effort among general UW supporters to get some money for the fund?
There were two very important groups, really. I provided the UW Foundation with a list of the students I had more or less kept in touch with. And they supported the endowment very generously. Since my retirement, we have had a group here in Madison, the Wisconsin Hardy Plant Society. It's really Madison people, and we now have about 650 members. I have been very active in this group and have served on the board up until the present. This group has been fantastic. We have monthly meetings. We do wonderful trips together. We go to England every other year. We have speakers and trips. And so turns out these 650 people all know me. I don't necessarily know them all by face or by name, but this group was exceedingly generous in supporting the endowment. And so even one of them had a birthday party for me, asking that people, no cards, but just contributions to the endowment. So, I think every one of my volunteers also were probably the most generous of all.
That is quite impressive.
So, that is the most pleasing thing I think that has happened to me.
You know, Ed, there have been lots of attempts over the years to honor professors by creating endowment funds, and generally they don't work.
I know it. I know it.
So I celebrate the fact that this one did. And
yes.
I think that reflects, for lack of a better word, quite well on you and how you worked with people.
Well, most of the donors were people who knew me, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's humbling, definitely.
I can see that, but I could also see just before you go to sleep at night. Well, that was pretty nice.
Yes.
Ed, I want to ask you now to think back and give, we'll start a discussion on the Arboretum itself, its growth, its development, its change. And I know last session, off record, you were talking a little bit about Catherine Bradley, who was a major figure in developing the Arboretum. And I'd like to have you reflect on her a little bit.
Bob, I'd like to start with one other thing. In 1959, Mr. William McKay, really owner of McKay Nursery, had worked a great deal with Bill Longenecker, and they were great friends. Mr. McKay left $100,000 to the Arboretum upon in his will, really because of Bill Longenecker and his connections. That $100,000 remained in the UW Foundation up until 1977, when the Arboretum decided to build a visitor center. Before that, there was really nothing here for visitors to be introduced to the Arboretum, or it was just
no place
just
to
walked in
for a,
for anything.
A talk, huh?
So the Arboretum committee decided to use the McKay funds, which had accumulated to that point of $300,000, to build a new building. Now, in reality, that should have gone to the Longenecker Gardens. That was Mr. McKay's interest. That's why he gave it. But we didn't think it was that vital back then. After all, we were all just doing our thing. So I think that was one thing that was a missed opportunity for the Longenecker Gardens. The new building was, we talked a lot about a proper name. It was called and dedicated as the McKay Center. Unfortunately, when the building was added on to later, the name was dropped. Those associated with McKay Nursery were hurt by that. So now the sign says Arboretum Visitor Center.
Why was it dropped?
I wasn't part of the process at the time. So I wanted to go back to that. And so then you mentioned Catherine Bradley. I well remember when Catherine Bradley was appointed as the Arboretum director, I was so incredibly impressed with her. Her ability as an administrator, of working with people, of simply handling and prompting the Arboretum Committee into action. And so the other thing Catherine Bradley did, she was active beyond the Arboretum. She was a very active member of the American Association of Botanic Gardens and Arboreta. So she was well known nationally. She served, I remember she was on the recognition board of the AEBJ to come up with candidates and the awards program. She was so skilled at doing that kind of thing and saying the right things about people. I always thought, gosh, I'd like to be an administrator like that.
Where was she from, the university, or had she come in?
No, Catherine was She graduated from Vassar.
Oh.
And she taught at Wellesley College. She came to Madison to the university. I don't remember her position here, but then she met Joe Bradley and they were married and started having a family. And so she was a homemaker for a number of years.
Oh.
And Grant Cottom knew her. And I think asked her to apply. Hmm. And he could see that she had some potential here.
Was she a scholar?
Very much a scholar, yes. And she just got things done. Hmm. And this, she was here before this building was built. And so we had what was known as the just had this little building with her office in it an apartment for a person who was to look after the safety and security. It's called a security residence, actually.
Did you know her before she came here?
I did not. But we became close friends.
Mm-hmm. How long was she here?
I would say about 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, when she retired, I was appointed as chair of the search committee to find a new director. I don't remember who my fellow committee members were, but we offered the position to two different people who turned us down. I think we were aiming a little high, maybe.
People turned you down because it wasn't big enough?
I think we had encouraged a couple people to apply. One of them was one that I was so impressed with. And so they applied because we asked them to. But then when offered the position, they declined. So we went to number three, who was Greg Armstrong. Greg Armstrong was at Smith College as the director of the Smith College Botanical Garden. He was a Wisconsin graduate in horticulture, so I'd had him as a student. So I knew him many years before.
You had him as an undergrad?
As an undergrad. Oh. He got his master's degree at Smith, I believe.
Oh.
Maybe it was at Amherst College, possibly. I thought, well, this might be a nice working relationship. I think it was at first, but it turned out not to be the case. And so I always found it a difficult situation. And I think particularly after I retired, when the horticulture department came up with funds from the USDA to do a master plan for the Longenecker Gardens, Greg Armstrong did not want me to be on the committee. So, but I insisted. Let's say it was not an agreeable match. And so in spite of Greg, he had attempted to take a portion of the Longenecker Gardens away from the gardens for his new idea of a Wisconsin garden. So I don't think I'll say any more except to say that I wish we hadn't selected him.
Uh-huh. He must have come in the early 90s, maybe, late 80s?
Well, I was obviously still, I hadn't retired yet, so probably late 80s, I can't say offhand.
And when Catherine Bradley stepped down, what were the issues then facing the Arboretum? What did you need the new director to do, or want the new director to do?
I think we were in great shape. There were always issues. I remember one of the major issues over the years was the traffic on McCaffrey Drive. So it was a convenient cut through to avoid the Beltline, and it was dangerous because we had bicyclists, we had pedestrians, we had cars. Several things were tried. Ultimately, we put a gate up at the Wingra parking lot, which divided the Arboretum, really. And so there was no way someone coming from Mills Street to reach the visitor center, which was rather counterproductive. They could park in the Wingra parking lot and walk along the drive. The parking lots were expanded greatly, and a gate was placed between the two parking lots here at the visitor center. And so every visitor could get to the visitor center. So we spent a lot of time dealing with that. I also remember the discussion, long discussions we had about the location of the new visitor center, the new McKay Center. Should it be convenient to the bus lines on Nakoma Road? For a long time, that was the site selected. I can remember John Thompson saying, well, maybe it should be on the railroad track, where we're going to have these railroads, which would be over on the Beltline, where the railroad crossed the Beltline. Eventually, we decided it should be here in the middle of the Arboretum, where what we have called the core area. And of course, all the maintenance functions were here as well. I think maybe dealing with the McCaffrey Drive traffic problems, the building. We spent a lot of time on construction of desilting ponds within the Arboretum to protect basically Lake Wingra. And then the deer problem faced us.
And that was part of the whole reintroduction across the United States of wild animals just coming into more populated areas.
That's right. That's right. So as I said when I started, if anyone had told me they had seen a deer, I'd say they were crazy. Well, they turned into a serious problem. And when we started the program of deer control, that is shooting them,
yeah, I remember it was controversial.
Very controversial. And the animal rights group at one point said they would cut down a tree for every deer that was shot.
Oh, I remember that.
And of course, they chose the trees in the Longenecker Gardens. And so that was very depressing. And these are people you couldn't deal with, you couldn't make any sense with. Is cutting down a tree any better than killing a deer? Or any worse? It's much worse in my estimation.
I take it they were successful in cutting down some
Indeed
trees.
They were. About, as I remember, about 15 of them. Well, that eventually quieted down. And maybe Catherine Bradley was skilled at dealing with that as well. I don't remember the details. Another thing that had happened that was hard on me, every year a conifer was cut at Christmas time in the Pinetum. And one year it was a chalet Swiss stone pine, about an 8-footer, that was probably worth $800. And so we used to block the entrance to the Pinetum in early December. At one point, we sprayed a mixture of rotten eggs and pink dye on the trees, which would eventually be washed off, but would make them less desirable for a Christmas tree. And so that eventually stopped, but about 3 years ago, it happened again. And again, a very valuable tree was cut down.
So this was not university sanctioned. It was just somebody coming in
That's
and cutting
right.
a tree.
That's right. And of course, we're open to all comers all at night here. You know, there's really no security at that time of the day.
No, there's no gate to lock.
No.
You can hop over.
So I guess, you know, I've always had to put those things out of my mind and go on. So I must say the people problems have been fairly minimal. Only once can I remember that a plant was actually dug and stolen out of the Longenecker Gardens. I think the deer problem is a thing that we're still grappling with.
Did you suspend or stop the shooting program, or is that still?
It still happens. Now, when people ask me how many deer we've shot this winter, I say, well, I haven't asked, I don't know. So it's done quietly. Mm-hmm. It's done by DNR sharpshooters, and the carcasses go to the food pantries. Mm-hmm. We now have an oversupply of turkeys, and
the
wild turkeys, and somebody's going to have to make some decisions there, because they're getting out of hand.
Really? Those were reintroduced, weren't they?
Oh, yes.
And then it was sort of like the apprentice?
They have certainly been successful. So they like this place that has all these crabapple fruits they can eat all winter, and no one shooting at them. So time will tell.
Ed, is there any possibility of the Arboretum acquiring more land on the perimeter or elsewhere?
Well, that was another issue that we dealt with the Arboretum Committee for many years. And indeed, we acquired land quite commonly. We did, however, sell off what was called the Bishop's Tract, which was sort of landlocked by the Beltline. And as I remember, the proceeds went to a good cause within the Arboretum. I can't now remember what that was. But it's been a while since any land was acquired. And probably there isn't an opportunity anymore.
Do I remember something about Harlan Sprague?
The rat farm?
Yes. I've kind of forgotten. That impacted on the Arboretum somehow, didn't it?
Well, we've always referred to it as the rat farm. And when that was being went up for development, sold, the Arboretum hoped to acquire the wetlands associated with it.
I see.
Which is actually at the south end of the Grady Tract with Arboretum land, which did not happen.
That's been a while.
Yes, that was that was a hoped for, maybe a contribution of that land to the Arboretum.
When did Greg Armstrong step down?
Well, I can't really say right now. I'd say it's now 10 years ago by now, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And who came in then as director?
The new director was, throw that off a minute.
You can turn it back on.
The director following Greg Armstrong was Kevin McSweeney. Kevin was a member of the Soils Department, a forest soils expert, who wasn't in on the politics of his appointment at all. I knew him just a little bit, and in fact, he is a neighbor of my son. And my son knew him better than I did, probably. I had a very nice relationship with Kevin. I think he respected me a lot. He was always open to me. He definitely was one of the people that made the Longenecker Endowment a reality. So he worked closely with the UW Foundation and included me always in all of the discussions and decisions. And so I was sorry to see him go.
Oh, he's not here.
He made the decision to go back to the Soils Department.
Oh.
And that always, in administrative situations at the university, you and I know well that you always have the option of going back to your home department, to whatever your teaching and research or extension happens to be.
And he returned to teach or research? Or
I think he's probably doing both. Mm-hmm. And so his departure was a total surprise to me. And so now, now remember, the Arboretum is now under, administratively under the graduate school.
When did that happen?
Well, after my retirement, and so I'm not sure exactly when that occurred. Donna Conluck is the current, I'm sorry, Donna, not Conluck. Turn that off.
You probably liked it It seemed to have worked well when the Arboretum was directly under the Chancellor.
I suppose it depended on the skill of the director in working with the Chancellor. And so it was the chance, I think Catherine Bradley decided that the Arboretum should be fenced. The Chancellor granted her the money. And so I think it was, you know, this sort of interpersonal relationship that was extremely important. And when I wanted a chipper and a flail more, we got it from the Chancellor.
Would you say, Ed, that the Arboretum and the gardens were considered one of the crown jewels of the university? You know, I hear various departments are referred to as that way, you know, when the university is looked at from the outside.
It's hard to say. I think any of my former students who love the Longenecker Gardens would say that is the most important part of the university to them. One of the members of the board of the Friends of the Arboretum used that term recently, that this is the crown jewel of the Arboretum. Naturally, I agree. I think, to me, the Longenecker Gardens is reasonably well maintained. It is a special place. The rest of the Arboretum, let's say there are 1,200 acres here, an awful lot of it is just buckthorn and honeysuckle and trash. Just thinking about it depresses me. The fact that the deer now, there aren't woodland wildflowers to any extent anymore.
Is that a casualty of the deer?
Absolutely. The famous Curtis Prairie, I don't say anything, but I see it being taken over by sumacs. And so I worry a bit about the rest of the Arboretum. But as a retiree, it's not my place really to say anything.
Now this is speculative. If money were not an object, suppose somebody wrote a $50 million check to the university to benefit the Arboretum, what would you do with it?
I think it would be up to the Arboretum Committee to make that decision, not mine.
But if you sat on the committee, what would you advocate for?
I think probably some kind of master plan to deal with the future and maintenance of the Arboretum.
The master, what master plan is there now for the future of the Arboretum?
There is, I'm sure, a management plan. There again, my interest is in the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens and its future.
Right.
And so I have not been involved in the bigger picture.
What do you see coming down the pike for the garden?
Well, I think one of the things that we have to deal with is that along McCaffrey Drive, there has always been a fence. It's been called, referred to as a hog wire fence, not a thing of great beauty, and it's falling to pieces. Its presence is important to keep cars, motorcycles from just leaving McCaffrey Drive and entering the Longenecker Gardens. And so something has to be there. I would love to see a low fence that literally could be stepped over, but would impede a car or a motorcycle from coming in. And we have had vehicles coming in and running over young trees in the past. Fortunately, it's a rare occurrence. That's something that we're going to have to deal with. I had felt that the most important thing in terms of development was this entrance to the Arboretum. Entrance to the Longenecker Gardens. And so that was the priority I felt when the Friends of the Arboretum came up with this money, I was overjoyed that that could be done. We should have another proper entrance up at the Wingra parking lot, going into the Pinetum. Mm-hmm. And then a third entrance, constructed, is people who come through the visitor center go out the back door and enter the Longenecker Gardens at that point. The other thing, we have not had a proper vine display. Vines are an important woody plant. They are now on the nursery fence where visitors aren't likely to find them, really. And so part of the master plan done by Dennis Bittner was that there are a series of structures to support vines through the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens. The Troyas have supported one that is now in place. Hopefully in the near future there will be others that will be placed within the gardens. What we need now is, I think, a printed guide to the Longenecker Gardens. There are a number of other guides for various areas in the Arboretum. And we've had several in the past. Keeping them up to date has not been easy. And so, I would guess that a new young person would probably develop a website. And probably a more aggressive tour program. Now, this coming spring, we will have a series of tours. I think it's in the month of May, all of them, every Wednesday in the month of May, and maybe one into June. Turns out I'm going to have to do three of them. We have typically engaged others to now there's been a lilac tour, there's been a crabapple tour, a tree tour, a pinetum tour. I think these tours are important. When I give a tour, I mention the volunteer opportunities. the last couple of years, I've mentioned the Longenecker Endowment opportunity. But it's, I think, again, we could do a better job of this. And we talked about really taking the names of the people who show up for these tours. Well, we started it, but we never did anything with it. And so I think a little more activity involving maybe the public than I have been able to do.
Mm-hmm. Are you still on the Arboretum Committee?
No, I have not been. Since I retired, and I can't remember a number of years before that. It went back early, remember.
Mm-hmm. Is that a mistake, not to keep people like you on the committee?
Well, there was a criticism, I think, at one point that it became an old man's club. That there were a group of us who were on the committee endlessly. We knew each other well. We loved the Arboretum. We had the skills to deal with things that came up with the Arboretum. But there are more and more faculty at the university who wanted to be a member of the Arboretum Committee.
So it became a choice committee.
It was, really. And so then it became a committee with a regular turnover of members. Mm-hmm. So I think it was 19 years maybe that I was on the committee, or 20. I for most of those years, served with the same people.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a strength.
Yes. So there was always a member from horticulture, a member from entomology, a member from wildlife ecology, from plant pathology, the physical plant and buildings and grounds. So there was this expertise built into the committee.
Does that expertise still exist with newer faculty, or have they brought in, has the university brought in faculty who perhaps love the Arboretum but don't know a whole lot?
I'm not close enough to it, Bob, to really know, but it is definitely a changing scene.
The Arboretum is a line item in the university's budget?
Presumably it is, yes. Yes.
And legislature has never taken aim at the Arboretum, I assume.
Not in my recollection. There have been times when I remember that, a number of things. WHA wanted to put up a huge broadcasting tower within the Arboretum. University Extension wanted to build a building in the Arboretum. This building is a very popular place for departments to have meetings. There's plenty of parking available. And so the Arboretum and its facilities are desirable to the university.
Absolutely. What is the full range of your activity here now?
Basically, I call all the shots with the Longenecker Gardens. I decide what's to be planted, what's to be removed. I work with volunteers. We literally do all of the shrub pruning and a lot of the weed control. I work with really one person who is on the maintenance staff, and ask him to give him a list of things to do regularly, which involve planting, maintenance, mulching, tree pruning, tree removals, these kinds of things. And so during the planting season, usually other people on the maintenance staff pitch in and help. And so basically I keep the Longnecker Gardens going.
So you're not central. You are the advocate and the guardian of the Longnecker Gardens.
Yes. And presently I have all of the records in my home.
Oh, really?
And as soon as a person is appointed out here, that will all come out here.
So do I gather correctly that you look forward to adding a master degree curator here?
I do. Of turning over all of this, and maybe along with some knowledge, to this person, and maybe just enjoying the gardens.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes.
That you could walk out here instead of a notebook. This needs pruning.
Yeah, right. But I must say, I have a lot of visitors every year. Colleagues from other universities, other botanical gardens, other arboreta, former students, and we're regulars at Tony Frank's over lunch. Now this, for example, right now I have requests for cyanwood from several institutions, that is pieces of plants. For propagation, in this case, grafting or cuttings, that have been requested from me from the Longnecker Gardens. Well, this 80-year-old with a stick can't go out in the deep snow. So as soon as the snow is gone, I will be out there collecting this material, sending it on to these other institutions. And that's been a very important function of ours. We have all of these spectacular plants here that people know, hear about, and want propagules from them, cuttings, cyanwood, seeds, and so on.
Ed, is there an association of arboretums and botanical gardens in the Big Ten?
No, there isn't. It's a national. It's the American Public Gardens Association. Used to be the ABGA, American Association of Botanic Gardens and Arboreta. Within that organization, we used to have regional meetings. And the organizers of those regional meetings was my former student, Chris Jarantowski, director of the Chicago Botanic Garden. Regrettably, those no longer exist. We should talk about several professional organizations, though.
Right, yes. That's the. Are you ready to
yes,
move into
yes,
that?
Yes, I am. Probably the initial one was the International Lilac Society. Bill Longnecker was definitely involved in that, and I have been a member ever since, probably ever since 1966. And I have always felt the responsibility of keeping this lilac collection up to date. because it is one of the premier collections in the United States. And so I have been a fairly active member of the International Lilac Society. I mentioned hosting it in 1985 and again this year. And again, when the lilacs are in bloom, the Madison community knows about it and shows up in force. And that has been somewhat of a tradition. And a lot of people tell me they have arranged their vacations to come to Madison during that time.
Really?
So that's been an important group. Another one that I was a part of founding was the American Crabapple Society. In that case, it no longer exists. It was a society that had only professionals in it. There weren't amateurs collecting crabapples. After all, you couldn't have that many. With lilacs, their amateurs have wonderful collections and are always seeking more. So the American Crabapple Society no longer exists. The Magnolia Society is an international society that has been I have been a member for many years. While I was teaching, I could never go to the meetings because they were always at Magnolia blooming time, but after I retired, I went quite often.
And when is the blooming season for Magnolia?
Well, typically in May and early June, and it depends where it's held in the country, of course. We have an important Magnolia collection, and partly because we have one of the major Magnolia breeders in the country in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Really?
And so his name is Dennis Ledvina. He has, I would say, come up with the most important magnolia of all. It's named Rose Marie, named for his mother, which is a pink-flowered magnolia. The flowers are perfectly formed and is making a splash internationally right now.
Really?
So my connection to the Magnolia Society has been important, but I think Dennis Ledvina's influence on magnolias in the state of Wisconsin is the most important.
Are magnolias native to Wisconsin?
No, not a one. There are two magnolias that are native up to maybe about central Illinois, the cucumber tree magnolia and the umbrella magnolia, both of which are represented here in our collections. The American Conifer Society is probably the most important group to me personally. I was a charter member when it was formed. Don't ask me the year.
Okay.
But it has been a very successful organization. So we not only have national meetings, but we have regional meetings. We are what is known as in the central region. We have hosted the central regional meeting several times, and I attend national and regional meetings regularly. We are considered to have an exceptional collection of conifers, over 600 taxa.
Wow.
And once again, mainly American Conifer Society members come here to view the collection, to collect cyanwood regularly. And again, I'm sending cyanwood out from here.